The state of Maine's dairy farms. We've all witnessed the ongoing saga of the slow decline of Maine's dairy industry, as measured by the dwindling number of family farms and some processors. So where are we headed? There are changes afoot. One of the region's largest operations, Maine-based Oakhurst Dairy, has been sold to a national farmer-owned co-op. On another front, Maine farmers who lost their contracts with processors decided to team up and create their own company called Moo Milk that's putting Maine product on store shelves. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on the program we'll talk with a panel of Mainers on the front lines of the dairy industry. We've witnessed the changes, but also see some opportunities that are emerging in the marketplace. We'll peek behind the curtain to learn more about how milk is priced, and discuss the differences between regular milk and organic milk, the future of dairy in Maine. First, this news. From the MPBN studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. Earlier this year, Oakhurst Dairy announced it was being acquired by a national farmer-owned cooperative based in Kansas City, Missouri. The transaction, according to Oakhurst, will not affect the more than 200 Oakhurst employees nor the 70 independent Maine farmers who supply Oakhurst with their milk. But the deal does speak to the changing dairy farming landscape in Maine. Today on the program, we'll discuss the state of dairy farming in Maine. With me in the studio, Bill Bennett. He's the CEO of Oakhurst Dairy. Bill Eldridge, CEO of Moo Milk. Jenny Tilton Flood as a dairy farmer with Flood Brothers Farm in Clinton, Maine, which has been in business since 1927. And Spencer Atell, co-owner with Paige Tyson of Two Loons Farm in South China, Maine, and a longtime board member of the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. We invite you to join the conversation. What questions do you have about milk and about dairy farming in our state? The phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. First of all, welcome to all of you.
Hello. Thank you.
We'll start with Bill Bennett, since we mentioned at the top a couple of times about the acquisition of Oakhurst by this national co-op. How have things gone? You said, I think, at the outset that it wouldn't have much effect on the Maine landscape. How has it gone?
It's gone very well. First of all, just a minor correction. Yeah. I'm the former CEO and chairman of the board. I'm now a senior advisor. My brother John is co-president, and I've got a couple sisters and a brother-in-law still working there.
Thanks for the correction.
But that's kind of a lead into how we're doing. The same people are there, doing the same jobs, providing the highest quality Maine product to Maine consumers throughout New England. And we found that DFA, Dairy Farmers of America, have been very good to work with. They hold the same commitment to quality and integrity that we always have. And they're very supportive of local dairies working with local farms, producing a local product of the highest quality. So it's really meshed quite well. As I said, the same people are running the company. And it allowed us to be able to say to people, you know, when I'm driving down the Forest Avenue 20 years from now, I'll look from the window and see my slightly older brother in the window still hard at it. We intend to be here for the long haul, and DFA's behind us 100%.
Now, you said this was not about a declining industry or move in that way, but it was more of a the fact that there was not another generation to take over. What were the reasons for this?
That was part of it. And also, you know, how do we continue to compete in a bigger market, bigger customers who may find it harder and harder to deal with an individual company with one plant in Portland, Maine? And but kind of the kicker was there was no fourth generation readily available to walk in, nor had anybody shown great interest. So with our goal of Oakhurst Dairy still being at 364 Forest Avenue 20, 30 years from now, how can we partner with somebody? And DFA, we'd been talking with them off and on. They have been interested in us for a couple of years anyway, but we just weren't really talking until about 6 months ago when we decided that probably is the best route for us in the Maine dairy industry to keep a plant here in Portland, Maine, in our business here in Maine.
Jenny Tilton Flood, you operate Flood Brothers Farm. Where is that again?
It's in Clinton, Maine.
Clinton, Maine.
Maine's dairy capital, actually.
Maine's dairy capital. How many cows do you have?
We have 3,900 cows on our farm. We milk around 1,700 of them throughout the year.
You heard Bill Bennett's story of there not being another generation. How much of the decline – we know the market factors too, which we'll talk about. But how much of the decline has to do with younger generations or – younger family members just not wanting to get into this very difficult and volatile business?
Well, it's an important issue. I don't think it's so much they don't want to. It's just a real tough battle for them. A lot of the farms have multi-generations. Our farm has it's fourth generation now. There's three generations working there. There's 22 family members alone on the farm. So, you know, our commitment is to try and make sure that that farm is there so that if the younger generations want to be a part of it, they can. It's the same approach that, you know, the family at Bennett has taken, you know, the family at Oakhurst has taken. Every farmer, doesn't matter what size they are, I mean, there are 277 family farms in the state of Maine. Every single one of them, from the one with eight milking cows to ours, our focus is making sure that the younger members have the options to actually pursue farming. And a lot of that has to do with going with the rolls and punches and making changes.
At its core, is this really just about money in and money out? I know there are a lot of variables and complications behind milk pricing, and maybe we'll explore this. But does it come down to farmers have this much cost and the price they get for milk is this much, and if it's upside down, it's not good?
Well, that's never good. But yeah, that's a part of it. But for dairy farmers, and I'm sure Spencer can answer this as well, is that's just a small part of it. It's a way of life. It's the way we live. It's a heritage. It's a tradition. One of the most exciting things in Maine family farms right now are the people who don't have that tradition and heritage in their family, but they're seeking it to create it for their younger generation. And that is a promising factor in milking industry in the state of Maine. And I'm sure Moo Milk is capitalized on that because they've got a lot of people coming in just for that purpose. It fits that niche.
Bill Eldridge mentioned Moo Milk. Nice segue. Moo Milk was born when a group of about a dozen farmers lost their contract. You're holding up fingers. I couldn't see.
Ten
fingers. 10 farmers lost their contract with producers and decided to do something about that, created their own company. Take it from there. What happened?
Well, basically, the first thing that we looked at, and at that point in time, we were trying to save the farms, and we obviously went to some of the national producers and said, you know, would you like to take our farms, milk and whatnot? And we were turned down completely by the national organizations. Having said that, there was only two choices for us. Could we try and save the farms by starting a milk company or just let them go under? And since basically our mission is to try and save the small organic dairy farms in Maine and New England, we took it on as a challenge, and we've been fortunate that now, 4 years later, we're still expanding throughout New England.
You had some problems at the beginning, I recall, with capital, getting enough money in the startup. Was that because you needed subsidy to operate, or you just needed startup capital?
Well, no. I figured out a good way to lose money. basically, you buy milk and pay organic prices and then sell it to Oakhurst. It's conventional milk, and there's a gap in there that develops fairly rapidly. So that was tough.
Yeah. Spencer Atell, how long have you been in the dairy farming business?
We bought one cow in 1980 just as a way to have our own milk and slipped back into commercial dairy farming. By 88, we were milking a grand total of 12. We now milk 65 roughly and have been shipping organic since 98.
So you have grown throughout this period that we've been reading headline after headline of demise, death, destruction. I'm exaggerating, of course, but most of the stories about dairy farming in Maine have not been good over the last 20 years. You've managed slow growth. What's been your experience, or how have you done that while others have struggled?
Well, the dairy industry in Maine has run into a concrete wall and fallen flat. We're down to 280. When we started, there was 1,200, and that's only been a few years, really. But we're working in 200-year-old footsteps at our place. It's a first-generation farm for us, but we're working right over the top of many layers of farmers working our fields. Our farm includes the oldest house in China. It started 1789 trying to make a living off this land.
Jenny, most people experience much of what they know about milk is the price that they see on the sticker in the grocery store, particularly when it goes up. Milk is one of those things where people tend to notice the price increase because it's front and center. It's something you have to get every day. It expires pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And if you have kids, you go through it faster than gasoline. So help us understand then. What is this mysterious process? Is it simply market supply demand? Or what are the other factors that come into this that set the price for consumers?
If I could explain the pricing of milk in 30 seconds or less or 30 minutes or less, mm-hmm. I would be a very wealthy woman. It has to do, the price of milk that the farmer is paid has very little to do with their cost of production. It's very little to do with supply and demand on the store shelves. It has to do with a very complicated formula from the Federal Milk Order Pricing System. It's old. It's antiquated. It solved a problem. When it had to, it is kept around. We're sort of tied to it. Oakhurst, H.P. Hood, Agrimark, Smiling Hill, Moo, not so much. Organics are not as much chained to it, but it affects us all. And it has to do with commodities. It has to do with purchasing. It has to do with the different classes of milk, whether it's butter or cheese or fluid milk. And so when I go into the store and I go into the dairy case and I buy my milk there and I always look for Maine milk, all I have to do is look for 23 as the code. I know it's bottled in Maine. And I look at the prices and I know how much it costs to get that milk out of the store. I also know how much it costs to put it into that bottle. I know how much it costs us to get it to the dairy right down the road here. And I know that they have costs involved. They're two different separate quantities, and it's really hard to quantify it for people to understand. But, basically very little of what is on that price comes to us. However, dairies like Oakhurst and Hood and Agrimark and Holton Farms Dairy, they work really hard to make sure that they pay above and beyond that Federal Milk Order price with their premiums. And that's what helps us farmers get through. When we achieve a goal they set for us, and they're going to compensate us for it. That's what we work for. That's why making sure that our cows are happy and healthy is job one. It isn't just how many pounds of milk we make. It's how well we make the milk.
Bill Bennett, when you were CEO of Oakhurst, you obviously had to make a profit for the company, but you also had to, I assume, look out for the interests of the farmers. You needed them to have a main product. You needed someone to produce that. Did Oakhurst ever have its own farms, or did it always just process milk?
No, we always processed milk, but we've been dealing with the same farms for the most part for generations. And we've found that it really helps us get a really good quality product by dealing with the same people for long periods of time. And you can't do that unless you're paying them a reasonable price. Now, is it always the price that they want to see? Obviously not, because there are fluctuations in pricing. But we've added premiums over the year for quality, some small premiums for volume, trying to make sure that what these guys call the mailbox price, what they finally end up with in their pocket, is enough to so that they can survive and thrive. Because you're right, without them, we're nothing. The milk is only as good as what farmers give us.
Spencer Retail.
Well, the difference here is there is an organic price that's set fixed. And this is a huge advance in dairy farming for most farmers because we can now plan ahead. Our price is set. They pay us that. It's their job to sell the milk. A lot of costs have been thrust onto farmers over the years. We've paid to preserve products as cheese. Just because it's a fresh product means that you've got to get rid of it immediately. So there's all these costs that have been built in. Trucking, we pay for everything, including electricity, to put it on the truck. Organic stripped away a lot of that and gave it a lot of price stability to the farmers, which gives us a real leg up on most other farms because we can now look forward and see what we're doing.
But are the costs for organic farmers higher because of the standards that you have to meet for to be organic?
There's a lot of differences between organic cows and conventional cows, and we're asking the public to pay for what we think is a different way of raising cows. Our cows have to go out and graze in the summertime and get us a huge proportion of their food from the land, which is a real different way of farming, but it's back to the future for a lot of these farms. But it does isolate us from some of the price swings in the commodity market for some of the things that the conventional farms are buying in from the outside. It may be more resilient in the long run.
All right. We'll talk a little bit more about the difference between conventional and organic farming and what that means for farmers and for consumers after the break. We'll take a short break now, though. When we come back, we also want to hear from you, your comments and questions. We're talking about the state of Maine's dairy industry. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Revision Energy, a local business specializing in the design, installation, and service of solar energy systems, revisionenergy.com, and CEI, Flexible Business Financing for the Economy, Social Equity, and Environment, ceimaine.org.
Hi, this is Mark Vogelsang, president of MPBN. Well, now that spring is officially here, many of us are thinking and dreaming of the warmer months ahead, not to mention the green grass and getting our gardens going. And behind the scenes here at MPBN, we're also making sure we can bring you the radio programming you value. And to that end, it's time for Super Thursday, a proud MPBN tradition that seems to be gaining momentum, kind of just like spring, as we all work together as a community to raise the support needed to keep MPBN going strong, all in one day, just one day, Super Thursday. You know, everyone here at MPBN is committed to being as efficient as we can around fundraising, and we know you are too. So make a note, Thursday, April 3rd is the date when we'll all jump right in with the phones and online contributions, everyone doing their part, and let's keep the magic alive. Thanks in advance. Here's to a warmer spring and a great Super Thursday.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, dairy farming in Maine. With me in studio, dairy farmer Jenny Tilton Flood, who is with Flood Brothers Farm, Spencer Atel, co-owner of Two Loons Farm, Bill Eldridge, CEO of Moo Milk, and Bill Bennett, former CEO of Oakhurst Dairy, now a senior advisor. Is that your title? Senior advisor? Sounds very impressive.
Oh, doesn't it?
We invite you to join.
He's definitely senior.
We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Bill Eldridge, when one says you're getting organic milk, what does that mean exactly?
Well, basically, as Spencer started explaining, there are different procedures that have to be followed. Simple little things like if your cow gets sick and you need to give it an antibiotic, that's the end of its organic life. I mean, they're gone. I mean, the farmer can send it, sell it, but it can't milk it for the organic there. And in addition, there are considerably more costs. When you start getting into MOFCA, well, they're an organization, nonprofit, but they do charge for the service of certifying all the organic farms as well as our process. So they're are these additional costs that creep in.
So you mentioned antibiotics. Are there restrictions on feed?
Let me take that one.
Sure.
Since I'm feeding the cows with a few other people helping out, we feed organic grain, which is a product that's produced without pesticides or fertilizers, synthetic fertilizers, and it's not GMO product. So there's a large network of tracking that goes into what we feed, and we have to certify to the National Organic Program that we feed only organic feed, including the stuff we raise ourselves from our own certified land. So there's a large difference there. In addition, no synthetics are allowed in the production, which includes more than antibiotics, but a lot of the silver bullets in our veterinarian's toolbox. It took some getting used to, but our cows actually ended up being just as healthy or more healthy than they were before.
So what do you do as an organic farmer when your cow becomes sick and a conventional farmer uses antibiotics? What do you do?
Well, maybe I can answer that with a little story. One of our early adopters said that, you know, if you treat the cow with antibiotics, it takes a full 7 days before you can get it back in the milk production with the withdrawal times and stuff that if you don't do anything at all, it takes at least a week. So really, cows are much more resilient than we give them credit for. And they heal themselves pretty quickly, and we're learning something from the cows about health care.
Jenny Tilton Flood, you are not – yours is not an organic farm. Right. And you have some thoughts about this. I'm going to let you respond to what Spencer said about the way it's being portrayed is it's really not that much of a different deal to just be organic. But you choose not to. Why?
Well, we do choose to give our cows medicine if it's needed because we do keep our cows on our farm. They're a lifetime investment for us. They're also family members. My father-in-law, my uncle-in-law, my brother-in-law, my husband can all look at the business end of a cow and they can tell you not only which cow it is, but they can probably tell you a story about when her grandmother, great-grandmother came on the farm and if there's a cute story with old Gramps had purchased her great-grandmother or something like that. We take the same approach. We're looking for the healthiest cow. If one of the choices or course direction that we need to take includes an antibiotic, then that's what we're going to do. It's not our first choice. We hope it's not the last choice. But, we're trying to meet the same goal, and that's a healthy animal. It's feed and housing is probably the biggest divide for us as far as a business decision. Because of the number of cows we have and, 3,900 animals on our farm, we raise them from birth till they go away. And we ship anywhere from 15 to 16,000 gallons of milk every day. It's needed milk. It's meeting the demand for the state of Maine. We don't have enough land to pasture all those animals. So we do feed them. We raise. We go all over creation looking for feed and raising it. About over 3,000 acres of grass for grass and hay and silage and 2,600 acres of corn. And we'll travel up to 35 miles to go get it and to tend it. So, we have those concerns, and that's what goes into our decision to be a conventional dairy.
Bill Bennett, we saw a few years ago these stickers on Maine milk saying no growth hormone. Is that pretty much convention now, or is the market divided?
Yeah. It's getting there. Some parts of the country where it's not as prevalent, but it started here. We were the first dairy in Maine and nationally to get our farmers all to pledge not to use artificial growth hormone.
What did the hormone do for you?
The hormone exists in cows anyway. It's natural. But you give them some more, and it allows their system, their metabolism, whatever, to produce more milk. And upwards of, and Jenny can probably tell me more, whether I'm wrong or not, but up to 20% more production. That's the excess. But we felt early on that whether that's good or bad, we wanted to make sure our consumers were okay or not okay with it. They weren't okay with it, so we said no. Whether the FDA says it's okay, it doesn't matter. Our consumers don't want it, and so we've never had it and never will.
I know some parents blame this on why they're – sons are 8 feet tall, even though the parents are both 4 feet tall. But anyway, sorry, Jenny, you're shaking your head.
I was just going to say, that's a typical misconception. And, we as a farm have never used BST or BDH. On an economic factor, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't extend the life of the cows. And like I said, we're looking for a cow to live a long time and be a healthy producer. So we've never used it. And I think that's one of the benefits of, and, I'm sure Mr. Bennett can back me up on this, of being in the state of Maine. Maine farmers are committed to continuing their tradition, and it wasn't a hard fight, I don't think, to get farmers to sign those pledges. And, we've signed a pledge. It wasn't hard for us to do. It wasn't a pledge in blood. And as far as, the 8-foot-tall son and the early developing puberty, compared to 40, 50 years ago, yeah, your kids are a lot healthier now. They're, when the greatest generation stepped into conscription, they were malnourished. They weren't eating. They didn't have balanced diets. And, we've come a long way to feeding and providing for our kids, and healthy food has really made the difference.
We'll go to Andy in Limerick on the phone in a moment. But first, via email, Anita in South Berwick asks, I buy Oakhurst milk because it's a Maine dairy. Why doesn't Oakhurst offer organic milk?
We've looked at that over time, and we'll probably look at it again someday in the future. But instead, we opted to align ourselves with Moo Milk. And when they first started up, we helped them out. We basically gave them a filler machine, helped them put it together, get it running. And then we've distributed their product to many of the accounts that they sell to. So we thought that was a good way to get involved, but not go whole hog and do all the things we'd have to do at the plant in order to make that work. And I think Bill can hopefully attest to that's been successful. And so we're in it, but not all the way in it.
No, we was Bill's brother, Stanley, who passed away a couple of years ago, was a major force in that. And the things that Oakhurst did as a theoretically a competing company are outstanding. We couldn't have gotten going without their help. And it's continued on right to this day.
Okay. Let's go to Limerick and Andy. Hi, Andy. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi. How are you today?
Good, thanks.
I just commented.
And we just lost Andy. Andy, are you still?
We buy our milk from a farmer's market in a glass bottle that we return, just like old, and to help support local farms. But
I'm sorry, Andy, we've lost your cell contact. His question on my note says, "Whatever happened to the milkman?"
Well, he got old, as these guys have told me I am, and people won't let you walk into their house at 5 o'clock in the morning either anymore.
Right.
So that's
right. But might we return Spencer Attell to sort of a modern era of the milkman? That is, can there be local markets for milk in ways that we used to have?
Well, that's one of the things that's bringing more dairy people into the industry, and I think it's a great way to get them started. Lots of people are developing local markets, not just for milk, but for artisanal grade dairy products, selling them at the farmers markets. You can't deliver it for the money anymore, sorry. But we are trying to get people into the industry, and then the next problem becomes, how do you get them to jump to a real sustainable level of production that's going to put enough money in the bank to put the kids through college and sell the farm someday for your retirement to somebody that's going to continue farming because it makes money?
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. That's 1-800-399-3566. Bill Eldridge, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, one of the things at Moo, when we got started, we were very adamant about that if any of our farmers want to be able to produce other products and sell them in the local marketplaces, our contract totally allows them to do that. Which is fairly unusual in terms of the overall organic producers. And at the same time, we started a loan fund so that our farmers can add more cows to build up their herd size to improve their economics.
Yeah, Jay?
I also want to add, you know, Maine is one of those special states where as a consumer, it's you have to look really hard to walk into your store dairy case or your farmer's market and not pull out some Maine milk. You know, most of the fluid milk in the state of Maine is from the state of Maine. It's either produced here. It may actually go out of the state and get bottled and processed and come back. But a majority of it is. It's very hard to find a label. Even your store brands are, you know, the My Essentials brand at Hannaford, that's Maine milk. And we're very fortunate. And we also have a really, really successful farmers markets program. You know, it's a great state to be in, to be interested in buying local. And that's really great.
How has the dairy industry dealt with what's my perception of sort of a little bit of a roller coaster ride when it comes to whether dairy is good or bad? You know, we've heard differing messages, mixed messages, really, from certain corners and from certain studies. Has that had an effect on the market?
I think so. I mean, we're still going to produce our milk. We know there's a market for it. What kind of milk gets put on the store shelves is a decision that the marketing gurus make at the processing end. But, I mean, we're making the finest milk we can. As a nutritious, beneficial part of diet, I mean, there's no denying milk is good for you. And, you know, and when it comes to people being hungry and food insecure, milk is one of the most – it is the number one nutritious food requested at feeding centers and at food banks. So, you know, that's very important. And you know, we do strive to make sure that the quality is there. But yeah, whole milk is now becoming, you know, trendy again, which is a good thing.
So skim was king for a while.
It was. We don't know why, but it was.
Yeah. Bill Eldridge.
Yeah. One of the things that's really interesting is that for the organic industry, milk is one of the entry points. And one of the entry points is because young families with young children want to, as Jenny said, provide the best quality milk that they can on a general basis. And so that's one of the things that's fueling the organic industry.
I have a question about myself about the 1%, 2%. I get lost even still about percentages, but we're going to go to Martha near Presque Isle. Hi, Martha. Welcome to Maine Calling. Martha, are you there?
Hello?
Yes. Hi. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to mention that as a consumer, we have to be very committed to the organic product in order to pay the extra money for the half gallon of milk. I have to go to a different grocery store because my local store doesn't carry Moo Milk, and that's sometimes the only thing I go to that store for. I head right to the back, pick up the Moo Milk, and pay the extra money. But we know a family, we're good friends with one of the families that started the Moo Milk business, and we feel very committed to them.
Well, thank you very much.
But it does take a lot of customer support.
Martha, can I ask, I'm curious, as a consumer, when you seek out organic milk and you're willing to pay more for it, is it that you just feel that organic is that much better, or do you distrust non-organic milk?
Nah, I'm more committed to trying to support people who are trying so hard to make a living on their farms. We have a small farm. We call it a hobby farm. We raise eggs and try to sell them for what we put into the grain and try to feed, you know, we have to feed the chickens all winter, and we're not getting, you know, we don't get any eggs in the winter time. I just know that it takes an awful lot to make that gallon of milk, and it's more of a personal commitment than either of the other choices.
Martha has some empathy for but Jenny, you were reacting to my question, and I guess I would bounce it off you as well. When I asked that question,
I committed Harry Carey. Yes,
it's a sensitive subject, but I ask it because, you know, it's out there.
Yeah, and I loved her answer. I think the farm she's committed to is Chase's. And they do a fantastic job as farmers and stewards of the land. And that's important because I would rather that be the reasoning behind someone choosing a brand or making that choice between organic or it's. And that's generally what it is in the state of Maine. They're choosing to support their neighbor farmer. And that is very important. I mean, we all go out there every day, 365, you know, 24/7 to do the best we can to steward our land, to steward our animals, and to raise our families, and to put a great product on our neighbors' tables. So, you know, it's when it's asked at that level, it kind of seems like it's not even touching the touchstone, so to speak. So I was really happy to hear that that's what she's doing. I mean, I'll lose a customer for that any day.
From Twitter, milk is for baby cows, not for people. Dairy is bad for your health and cruel to the animals. Don't believe the propaganda! Exclamation mark.
Well, maybe I should hit that one. We love our cows. Our cows love us. There are a lot of people in the world that really relate well to cows, not just from the car window, but when you see someone that really relates well to a cow, walk up to a cow, there's a real bond there between humans and the bovines, and they've been the mothers of the human race for many, many, many centuries. You could turn a cow out into the woods, probably last, a couple of days.
Yeah.
You know, these animals are our family.
We did get a couple of comments asking, one just simply asking about the humane standards, treatment of cows. How is that said? Are there rules about how you have to treat cows, or?
Well, these animals are giving milk voluntarily. We are not extracting a resource here that's done with a shovel.
Not unyielding, yeah.
Yeah, this is something you have to cooperate to give milk. Ask any mother, and you know, this is not something that can be done by force.
Yeah. The number, again, 1-800-333. I'm having a hard day today. I apologize.
Drink your milk now.
I know. Drink your milk.
Wait. 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. So as I said earlier, I'm shopping at the grocery store, and I see this array of choices. So as we said, there's Skim, there's Whole. Bill Bennett, there's also 1%, 2%. Why do these various products exist? Was this consumer demand? Somebody wanted—
Absolutely. It was consumer demand. Years and years ago, whole milk was by far the number one seller. Years ago, skim milk was almost something you threw away. There was no use for it. And that changed over time as people became more conscious of weight, calories, and the amount of fat, whatever kind of fat they had in their diets. So over time, we being a marketing company, among other things, knew that we had to meet the demand of the customers. And so we added way back, it was 1.5%. We called it OK Milk, and some older people still remember that. But there was more demand for 2%, 1%. And we brought that into the fold. We've got a probiotic milk, Nutrish, which adds a couple of cultures to it. You have to be, as well as a distributor, processor, distributor, a marketer of your milk, in order to meet the demands of the consumer so that we can keep this main milk industry. And unlike the rest of these guys, you know, if you're making a decision to buy milk based on it being produced locally, I'd love you to buy mine, but if you buy someone else's and you know it's Maine milk, that's great too, because we want to build this industry.
Jenny, really quick before a break.
Just wanted to mention that, you know, along with not only just different types of milk and fat, but whether or not you're lactose intolerant, I mean, there's a great movement and a lot of dedication to the people in the dairy industry to make sure that that lactose intolerance doesn't keep you from including dairy in your diet.
All right, so, and we'll talk about lactose intolerance briefly and other issues, including strawberry milk, when we come back. This is Maine Calling. Stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Collins Center for the Arts, offering The Met live in HD with Puccini's La Boheme this Saturday at 1 p.m., collinscenterforthearts.com. And Sweetser, seeking mentors for children with mental and behavioral health needs. Learn more at sweetser.org.
What do we mean when we call someone successful?
I run, jump, walk, season of the audience 26.5 miles on average on that day alone. So I do ultra marathons in a weekend physically. Everybody has days where they come to the end of the day. I come to the end of the day bone tired and victorious.
I'm Guy Raz. Success as a misnomer. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Join us for the TED Radio Hour following Maine Calling at 1 o'clock.
When MPB and Radio works to bring you the programming you value, the news and issues, the music, the last thing we need is to stop and do something quite different for about 8 days a week. On the listening side, the last thing you want is to have your everyday listening turned into something quite different as well. A week-long countdown with frequent requests instead of your uninterrupted, regular, valued programming. Well, that's what Super Thursday is for, to allow MPB and Radio to do what it does best and that you appreciate the most, and that is to provide you with uninterrupted programming. Just one day, Super Thursday, April 3rd, everyone working together to raise the support to keep it that way, short and sweet, a one-day membership campaign. Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, dairy farming. With me in studio, Spencer Atel, co-owner of Two Loons Farm, Jenny Tilton Flood, who is with Flood Brothers Farm, Bill Bennett, former CEO of Oakhurst Dairy, now a senior advisor to the company, and Bill Eldridge, CEO of Moo Milk. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. 3566. We'll go to the phones with a few people have questions about raw milk, but Bill Eldridge, you wanted to start us off.
Yeah, I just wanted to take a little bit of what Jenny said. Moo, which is moved down throughout New England, one of the interesting aspects are that folks from away also seem to think that Maine's a good place to have dairy from, and they treat us just like a local dairy down in Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to let's go to Penobscot and Philip. Hi, Philip. Welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm calling question specifically for the two bills. There's been some recent research done on lactose intolerance and how folks can't handle pasteurized homogenized milk can handle milk that's not been homogenized. That is, the cream rises to the top. And I'm wondering if Moo Milk or Oakhurst has ever thought of coming up with a line like that that would differentiate it from other products in the store that are all homogenized.
And yeah, go ahead, Bill Bennett.
Not lately. We had what we used to call cream top many, many years ago. But we've just simply found that the consumer, especially younger people, because they weren't brought up drinking milk that separated, the cream separating from the skim, if you will, they won't tolerate it. And if by accident we were to sell some milk that had cream at the top, which could happen if the homogenization process didn't work quite right, even if you told a consumer that's just cream, it's separated, shake it up and drink it, they think of it as being spoiled. So part of it's the education and the background. Would we produce something like that if there was demand for it? Sure, we would. But we homogenize milk because that's what the consumer has asked us to do over the last, well, now it's 50 years or so, 40 years.
And you pasteurize it because yep. you have to.
Because we have to, and we believe you have to. If we don't, there are a lot of pathogens that could survive in the milk and potentially hurt a lot of people out there.
A listener writes, I'm wondering if your guest might want to comment on the recent initiative in the Maine legislature to liberalize Maine's law with respect to raw milk licensing. The law, which was defeated in the Maine House the other day, proposes to allow the sale of raw milk directly from the farmer to the consumer, avoiding Maine's current licensing, testing, and inspection requirements. Jenny?
Yes, that did fail. That ought not pass was the vote of the Maine House. The vote and the issue is tabled right now in the Senate. And the issue isn't about raw milk. It's about food safety, food security, quality, and inspection. And it's about ensuring that the law still provides for these dairy farmers and producers and processors to be able to be to have the wherewithal and the information needed to make sure that everything is still safe and that they maintain the standards that all the other processors in the state of Maine maintain. There are over 100 licensed processors in the state of Maine. There are 277 or 271 dairy farmers in the state of Maine. So, I mean, we're all licensed. We're all going through these processes, and we're trying to make sure what the push should be is to try and make it feasible. Try and make sure that the person with two cows or three cows can jump through these hoops, that these hoops are easier and more beneficial, accessible and affordable for them. And that should be the focus. Where it goes, and we'll find out in the next few weeks.
All right, let's...
It should be pointed out that Maine has the most liberal raw milk laws that are in the nation, and is the department has been very supportive of raw milk producers over the years, bending over backwards to make sure they get a chance to sell their product.
But falling short of raw milk on the grocery store shelves for large producers?
The medical community is still pretty freaked out about raw milk.
On the national level, the FDA is very concerned about it. It's not easy.
Karen in Portland has a question on this subject. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I was just wanted to put a perspective in because in India, which I have visited, everyone, including their very strong middle class, the milk is all sold in these two-pint plastic bags. Everything is boiled. It's raw milk. The entire country is that way. And... I didn't see anyone getting ill from, you know, it's just one, and it becomes part of the society. People know to boil it. No one's getting ill that way. And in the future, they need to simplify the process with different ecological problems going on. The second thing I just wanted to mention, maybe someone could respond to, I did see some special somewhere where a town that had a dairy was using the methane from the cows to produce electricity. And some experiments going on about that, and I don't know if anything like that's happening in Maine.
Well, let's go to the methane capture expert, Jenny.
Well, actually, in the state of Maine, we're very fortunate. Stonyvale Farm, the Fogler family up in Exeter, does have a methane digester. It's a type of digester, and what it does is it captures the methane gas out of the product that the cows create, and they may produce a lot of milk, but they also produce a lot of poop. And what they're doing is they're taking that product, capturing the methane gas, converting it to very environmental friendly, very green, sustainable energy, and also taking the product that's left over and using that for compost and fertilizer. It's a process that's used a lot in Europe and very much so throughout the United States. Vermont has a lot of methane digesters. We're hoping to get that off the ground. The new EPA regulations that have come forth just this past week that were released, they're looking to increase the amount of methane digesters and the ability for farmers of all sizes to get in on this, because it's beneficial not only for the farm, it's beneficial for the community and the environment.
A caller has asked, is there any ice cream sold in Maine which is made from local Maine milk?
Well, only just the best ice cream in the world, Giffords.
Holton Farms Dairy. Holton Farms Dairy up in the county. They make great milk from their local milk products.
Yeah, we supply Giffords with milk and cream and have for 25 years.
I'm pretty sure the ice cream crowd is going to start contacting us here late in the game. A listener writes, what's one thing you wish someone would have told you about farming before you had to find out the hard way?
Get a little more sleep before you get started.
A newborn's easier.
Yeah.
They dairy farmers created 365, 24/7, all right? Long before it became a buzzword in our society, dairy farmers were living it day to day.
Why is dairy farming that much more demanding, do you think? Is it just the tasks that have to be completed, or?
Well, I don't know how Jenny deals with 1,700 pregnant mothers, but that's what it's all about. This is maternal, and it requires a lot of care. Constant care.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you have, like, you know, the smallest licensed dairy in Maine is 8. It doesn't matter if you have 8 or 3,900 animals. They all need care. And, you know, it's all run on girl power, so you do have to deal with that. But, you know, that's what it's all about.
All right. Well, Lana has a question about baby boy calves. Hi, Lana.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
They're talking about caring about the animals, but it is a business, and the baby boys that are born to the mother cows, what happens to them and what happens to the spent mother cows?
Well, we raise many of ours for beef, and we sell many of the bobs to others for beef, and many of the beef cows in the United States are bull calves born to dairy cow mothers. In addition, the spent cows, or the cull cows, when they're done with their productive life, are put into the beef stream, and much of the hamburger and stuff that you eat is dairy cow.
Care about the animals if you're killing them. So I've been to the dairy auctions, and I've seen spent mothers being auctioned to what they call kill buyers, and the baby boys who are 1 to 2 days old, and they still have an umbilical cord hanging from them. They're being sold to kill buyers. So if you're just killing them like that, that's not exactly caring about them like you claim. So dairy milk is an unnecessary product. It is for baby calves. You don't have to be artificially inseminating them to produce a very unnatural product for humans.
Yeah. Oh, no. Okay. Spencer, do you want to respond to Lana?
Well, I'm not sure I've ever heard wheat scream, but you are killing pretty much everything that you eat.
Yeah. But she does raise a point that I guess I never thought about that, what happens to the baby boy cows. And it's important to know where they go. So
all the systems that harvest animals for meat are designed for the utmost humane treatment that we can afford to give them. And we improve those standards on a continuous basis. And do our best to make sure that no excessive pain and harm is done to the animals.
All right. We've covered a lot of good stuff, but I do have one question for Bill Bennett, and it's about strawberry milk. Now, my son is on the fence about strawberry milk. Is strawberry milk a Maine thing, or is it popular around the United States? How much of your business comes from strawberry milk?
Oh, not a huge portion of it. We started it quite a few years ago now, just as something different. And actually, back then we were dealing with the Hershey Company, and we put up a Hershey chocolate milk, and we asked them, hey, are you guys interested in a Hershey strawberry milk? And they were. Well, since then, Hershey has stopped being in the milk business, and we continued on our own. And it's very popular. You know, we've tried all kinds of different milks over the years, blueberry milk, maple milk, mocha milk.
Strawberry has survived.
Strawberry has survived. It's always been popular.
All right. Well, with that, we'll have to end. Thank you all for being here today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jenny Tilton Flood, dairy farmer with Flood Brothers Farm in Clinton. Spencer Atel, co-owner with Paige Tyson of Two Loons Farm in South China. Bill Bennett, former CEO of Oakhurst Dairy, and Bill Eldridge, CEO of Moo Milk.
Does that mean I have to call in tomorrow to make my donation?
You don't have to, no.
Okay.
But thanks for the offer.
But I will.
Today's program produced by Jonathan Smith. John Keimel ran the board. We also had additional help from Susan Tran, John Bradford, and the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcasts by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. You can also find our podcasts on iTunes. Tomorrow on the program, an update on the financial situation at the University of Maine. Join me for a conversation with the Chancellor, the Vice Chancellor for Finance and Administration, and a member of the University of Maine's Board of Trustees to learn the latest on budget proposals, layoffs, and cutbacks. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.